Time to talk bread. Time to talk Ulakaka. Bread and Ulakaka for the holiday season. Paul Novak of Madison, our guest, bread maker extraordinaire. He teaches many classes at Madison Area Technical College. He's baked bread professionally for two French-style restaurants, including Joseph's French Cafe. And really great to have him back to talk about bread making during this holiday season. And he brought in some, oh, you brought some wonderful stuff today.
Well, I bribe you with Ulakaka.
It is wonderful. It's still warm. It smells so good.
Yes,
it tastes so good.
Made it this morning. It's a fairly simple white bread. Rich, but fairly simple.
Fairly simple? How simple? Tell us.
Well, it's just basically the basic ingredients are always a liquid, in this case milk. You don't have to have sugar in a bread, but this is a holiday bread, so it has some sugar. I shouldn't say a fair amount. A lot of butter. and yeast. But other than that, it has cardamom as a flavoring. It's got a couple eggs. The little bit of salt and a ton of flour. So it's it's an enriched white bread.
But boy, is it good.
Is it good, yes. And I love cardamom.
What's the history of Ulakaka?
Well, the Yule is Christmas and kaka is cake, but this is a sort of a rich bread, so it's in between, in between cake and bread. So it was a time of celebration in the winter when I suppose somebody would have saved up some butter, as opposed to Easter breads where you're celebrating the calving and such. And raisins. I forgot to mention plumped raisins.
And so Ulakaka originated in Norway?
Well, it's a there's a Norwegian version, there's a Swedish version. I mean, they're spelled differently, but essentially the same bread.
Oh, it's delicious. By the way, if you'd like to join in here as we talk about bread baking, maybe you've got an experience to share. Maybe you've got a question to ask about Ulakaka or other breads. I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. You gave us a year or two ago, you gave Jim a copy of the Baker's Catalog.
That King Arthur, right?
Yeah, King Arthur. And I see that even in the King Arthur catalog, they talk about bread machines and using bread machines. Well, I know you're probably not a big fan of bread machines, but
we've talked about them over the years.
Yeah,
and they have all different uses, and they've improved over the years. Some claim they can do 100% whole wheat. Some say they can handle sourdough. That part I don't understand. Okay, and some people use them in different ways. In other words, some people have the machine do the kneading, and then they take it out and bake it in their own pans. So I mean, you can mix up the way you use it. But it's handy for some people to get it going because it has a timer, can in a sense sit there and then start up and then go for X amount of time and be done later. So to me, making bread at home, I tend to like to use my hands, but I'm not going to be a purist or a zealot here. No, bread machines are okay too.
Bill in Manitowish has a question for you or comment. Bill, hi.
Yes, sir. I'm concerned about... how can we contrive to assure a nice crispy bread?
Oh, crust.
A healthy, thicker crust that flakes. And what is that? Purely using water or milk or what?
Well, what you have in your bread will affect the crust. In other words, this bread is fairly rich. And I don't necessarily want it to get a real hard crust like I would get on another bread. So this I baked at 350. My usual breads, sandwich breads, I bake at 400. So temperature is a big variable besides the richness of it. And then for, say, French-style bread, some people will put spray water in or have a pan of water at the bottom. I literally brush my loaves with water So there's those techniques to get a certain kinds of crust.
Yeah. When do you brush with the water?
When I'm doing just a French bread, which is basically, okay, you know, real simple white bread, I do it a couple times during the, you know, in the 30 minutes. I would do it in the middle or after 10 and then after 20. If you want a better crust, I'd go with a higher temperature. But, you know, be aware of what's going inside it, too.
Yeah.
And certain ingredients will get a really dark crust. You have to be wary of that, though. A lot of flax ingredients and soy flours. You might think that your crust is burning, and it's the ingredients that got the dark crust. So that could fool you. So, experimentation.
All right. There you go, Bill. Thank you for calling. Susan in Kenosha. Hello to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. Sure. Has your guest ever heard of the Finnish yeast bread called Pula?
No, I have not. I'm a fan of Beatrice Oyakangas, who has a great Finnish cookbook. So I've tried some Finnish breads, but not that one.
Okay, that was a standard one. My great-grandmother, who came over on the boat, everything used to make it. And it is a standard yeast dough, but it's sweetened a bit. And it's flavored with cardamom.
Okay.
And you braid it. You braid it and you brush it with milk and eggs and sprinkle it with sugar. And it's absolutely delectable with homemade jam.
I'm going to guess it's a Finnish version of something like yulekaka, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Because yulekaka, you can also do that same thing where you would brush it with an egg wash and put on powdered sugar, or other times you could just brush it with butter to soften the crust. There's a whole other way if somebody wants to go the other route.
Well, these are traditional things of the way that you do it.
Oh, sure,
You know what? And I'll tell you what. Pula is about the only good Finnish food I know.
Oh, well, see, I like rye breads, and the Finns make a lot of good rye breads.
Rye bread is good, the rye crisp and all that, but yes. The lutefisk is a nightmare.
And Pula is spelled, is it Boolah?
It's a different sounding word. In Finnish, you say the P, like it's halfway between a P and a B, and it's Pullaa.
There are a lot of double letters in Finnish.
Crazy. No, sometimes there will be 7 K's in a word.
Thanks, Susan.
Love talking to you.
Yeah, it was fun talking to you, too. Thank you very much for calling. All right, there we go. Chris in Kewanee, we're on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, guys. I have a question about sourdough starter that I've had in my refrigerator for about 2 months. Is it time to just toss it out, or can it still be used? And how would you go about getting a starter going by yourself?
What does it look like? Is it, if it's got yellow, green, or blue, it's probably, it's contaminated.
No.
If it just has a sort of a grayish color to it and has some liquid on top, I'm guessing it's okay.
Yeah, it's just kind of a sort of an off-white.
Should be fine.
All you need to do is feed it again, and my proportions are a cup and a half of white flour and a cup of water.
Okay.
That's for my consistency. Some people might want more or less flour. Let that sit overnight at room temperature, and, 8 hours, 12 hours, depending on what your room temperature is. And if it bubbles up, it's fine, and I use mine every 2 weeks, and it's been going for decades. So you do have to be careful. You can't let it go too long. It can't, you can kill it or it gets contaminated.
What do you actually do? How do you go about doing your bread with your starter once you get going? Now, what's your rising? How long do you let it rise? And how many?
Well,
I tend
to use the sourdough as an ingredient as opposed to the rising agent. In other words, I also use yeast when I'm making a sourdough bread.
Okay, that's what I've been doing too.
In the summer, it's easier to do it without the yeast, but then you'll have a longer rising time.
Okay.
So I'm really just putting it in as approximately a cup of liquid and a cup and a half of flour. And that's an approximation because it's alive. and it's a culture, and it's sticky, and
So
for me, it's just something I put in essentially in almost every bread, not the ulekaka, but almost every bread. And I also have a sour rye culture, and I use that every other week.
No, okay, so you're using one a week.
Yes.
One or the other every week.
One or the other every week, yes. And that's kept it going for, like I say, decades.
Yeah, there you
go. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
One thing, if someone wants to start a culture, the easiest way is to get it from somebody who already has one. Yeah. People often should want to give it away because then they might have a backup if that person can keep it going. If you lose yours, you can go get it from that person. But also, a lot of places sell a little packet of dehydrated sourdough culture.
Yeah.
I think Gold Rush is the name. And I have used that, and it works.
And it works fine.
And that will get you your initial starter.
Paul Novak, our guest, as we talk ulekaka and breads of the holiday season here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking ulekaka and other breads of the holiday season here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Paul Novak, noted bread maker, teacher. He's taught many classes at MATC, Madison Area Technical College. If you have a question about breads, baking it, making it, or maybe an experience to share, join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Bill in Madison's been waiting a long time, so let's go to Bill. Bill, hi. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, thanks. I've been making the no-knead recipe that appeared in the New York Times years ago since the day it first appeared and have never, ever had any failures. But I've just been using the enamel cast iron container with the cover on it for my humidified cooking, and I've always wondered about the stoneware vessels that you see on King Arthur and other sites, will they work the same? Because then I can try different shapes where I'm stuck with a round, almost flat loaf right now. What do I need to look for those vessels if I want to still use that same type of recipe?
Well, I do want to say I also have made that recipe, and I've used a cast iron Dutch oven with the cover. So to me, that has worked fine. What I'd suggest when you look at the stoneware is that some of them are going to have a glaze and some are not. And either one will work, but that's going to make a difference.
Okay.
How porous they are.
How will it differ?
Well, the ones that are not lined, in a sense, the ones that are totally, are going to be more porous and they're going to take some moisture out of the dough.
Okay.
Or you can put water into that dough, into that container. In other words, there's a thing called a cloche, which is a stoneware bottom and then a bell sort of a top. And some people will soak that top in water and then bake, and then you have your oven within an oven. So each has its own values. You know, the enamel one or the one with a coating is not going to be porous. That's going to be not that much different than cast iron. I mean,
sure.
I mean, it'll be different in terms of heat retention, et cetera. But the porous ones are going to be another way to experiment, almost like a coffee pot or a flower pot.
Yeah.
And there are recipes using flower pots.
There you go, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. Sandy emailed to say her ulekaka is too dry. What can she do or add to ensure it moist every time?
Well, the recipe that I have played with the variables over the years, and for me to reduce it too little butter is not good. It's a rich one. I can't quite do as much as it calls for. In other words, two sticks of butter and two loaves. but this one I did 1.5 sticks. So the fat
of butter.
The fat's going to be part of this. I cut the sugar a bit. In other words, this could be a lot more deadly than it is. Okay. But one of my techniques is when you're kneading the dough, to incorporate as little flour as possible at the end. In other words, I don't put all that it calls for. I leave out, let's say, a cup, and then I put in that. So I want my dough, when it's done, to be a little bit sticky.
Okay.
And then when you bake it, you'll get a crust, but the inside will still have some moistness. And so that's a technique I'd suggest for anybody in a sense, almost every loaf.
Well, I tell you what, yours is not dry. I mean, yours is wonderful. And the butter that you have with it, butter's a real important ingredient.
Yes, I've never really appreciated getting the little bowl of olive oil. So I grew up in Wisconsin mostly. And so this is Organic Valley. I like their cultured butter. They also make salted or unsalted butter. Mm-hmm. But then periodically they all have a pasture raised cattle and using their
butter,
which is much yellow without any, just naturally yellow.
Yeah.
And then they have another really fancy butter, comes in half-pound things. But you can get cultured, salted, unsalted. Mm-hmm. And the culturing gives an additional taste.
Judy in Indiana, on to you. Hi, Judy.
Well, thank you. Thank you for putting this program on, Bill. My question is, I've made a lot of rolls over the years. I've always used butter, my eggs from my hens, and I can never get that yeasty aroma that I run into from time to time at different restaurants. What is the secret?
You want that yeasty aroma. Okay.
And see, a lot of people would say they do not want the yeasty aroma. In other words, the people who make sourdough without yeast, where they're using the sourdough as a rising agent, don't want that yeasty flavor or smell.
So, right. I was talking about a normal white, yeast roll.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can, if you want to, increase the amount of yeast that goes into it, literally.
Okay.
And you could play with the temperature with more yeast so it doesn't get too fluffy. You could do it at a cooler temperature.
Okay, all right.
A cool rise.
So it's the yeast and not the cardamom that you mentioned?
The cardamom is going to, that's what this is going to taste like and smell like. The cardamom is pretty intense, yes.
Yeah, it's pretty intense, but it's wonderful.
Okay, but I just need to increase my yeast then.
Yeah.
If you want the yeasty flavor, yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Good
thank
luck.
You so much. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
And one little thing is that salt tempers yeast action. So if you want to put in more yeast, but not have it really do much more rising, you could put in more salt.
A little more salt.
So yeah.
There you go. Give it a shot, Judy. And thanks very much for calling. Alice emailed asking for a low carb bread recipe, especially one that can be used in a bread machine. A low-carb bread recipe. Is there such a thing?
Well, you can, in a sense, you could put in fillers. I mean, if I want to get really historical here, when people were really poor, they had to put in things into their bread that had no nutrition. Mm-hmm. And this would almost be like indigestible, sawdust kind of, that yeah. kind of stuff. Chalk was put in to make bread whiter. So certain things have been thrown in to dilute everything else. I'm not going to advocate going that way. my temptation would be to go with different kinds of grains. And in that sense, a lot of people worry about wheat. Well, there are all kinds of other grains. So even if you're not, don't have a gluten problem, I think it's a good idea to experiment and not eat so much wheat, because some people get intolerant of wheat itself. And so there's oats, there's rye, there's barley, there's corn, there's rice, there's amaranth. I mean, lots of different grains.
Ralph in Janesville, on to you. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question about yeast.
Okay.
I was wondering, does yeast have a shelf life? And if so, what's the best way to store it so it lasts the longest?
Well, yeast does have a shelf life. The yeast that I use, I keep in the refrigerator. I get it from the Williamson Street Co-op here, and they go through it fairly quickly. Every once in a while, you'll get a bad batch. It might not have been stored well, or who knows. But if you want to store yeast for a long period of time, just put it in your freezer. So my instant yeast that you have to buy in like a pound, half kilo, I put some in the refrigerator, and the rest just sits frozen. And it's going to last, I mean, who knows how long it's going to last. Yeah. Freezer burn is what's going to get it. It's not going to die in the freezer.
But when you freeze it, do you have to let it come back to room temperature before you use it?
No, because you're really, it's really the hydrating it that that gets the yeast going again. So when you bring that frozen yeast out, you could put that right into water. I mean, I'd probably feel safer letting it come to room temperature first, but then you just put it in your water, and it's the hydration that gets it going again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling, Ralph.
So I was going to say yeast can be killed by too high a temperature, but it's not going to be killed by low temperature freezing it.
Judy emails and wonders, what's the difference between bread flour and regular flour?
Bread flour is going to have higher gluten. It's going to come from certain strains of wheat that have more protein, and much of that protein is gluten. So a bread flour is going to be good for bread, but you wouldn't want to make pancakes with it. Okay. All-purpose is sort of for
yeah,
anything.
Whatever.
And I used all-purpose here because I didn't want a real, you know, a tougher
yeah,
crumb, or which is the structure. And if I'm going to make pancakes, though, I'm going to use pastry flour. That's lower gluten. So you've really got cake flour, then pastry flour, then all-purpose, then bread flour. Different gluten, you know, protein contents.
One.
Yes.
Bruce in Stevens Point, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. This is ironic. I just pulled out a bread book last night with the feeling that I wanted to make some holiday bread. And I was thinking about a bread that my mother and grandmother used to make. They were from Czechoslovakia, and this was a traditional holiday bread. It was yellow in color, and it had raisins in it and vanilla, and it was called Hoska. I've never seen it at a bakery in the United States, and I wonder if you, by chance, have a recipe or know what I'm talking about.
I don't have a recipe, but I'm going to just guess when you say yellow that it's eggs in there.
Yeah, and I got a bread book out right now, and I see things like Christmas Kuchen and Christmas Stollen. And they're breads with lots of well-beaten eggs in it. So I'm thinking if I follow one of those recipes and add vanilla and raisins, do you think I might hit on it?
Could be. Now, Stollen is a very high, you know, high-fat thing. Stollen is between a bread and a pastry.
I don't want to go that far. This was more like a bread.
Yeah. I mean, I think Stollens are great, too. But that's a different sort of thing.
You know what? I just went online and I typed in Hoska bread, and up popped several recipes.
Oh, you're kidding! Great.
I just I went online and the search engine, Bohemian Czech braided egg bread recipe, traditional recipe for Hoska.
Oh, fantastic! How can I get it?
Well, do you have a computer?
No, I don't, but I can send a self-addressed envelope to you with my address at in Stevens Point.
We could do that, or you could go, because there are so many recipes, you could go down to your local library. I mean, I'd be glad to pull one out for you, but you could go to the local library and go online there at their computer, and Hoska, spelled it Hoska.
Okay, you know, I'll do that. I don't want to take up more time on the radio than I should. I'm sure there's plenty of other people that want to talk.
But I'll try and post one, too, on my Facebook page. Of course, that won't do you any good either, so unless you get to the library and take a look. But there are several online, and with some pretty good reviews by them, too. And
okay.
I see what you're describing right now on the computer.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
And he mentioned braided, and so
yeah,
there's challah.
I see a braided one here.
You know, the challah bread, the Jewish bread is an egg bread that's mainly a white bread, and it's braided. So with also egg washes. So, Eastern Europe would have had, and Scandinavia would have all these, you know, variations on Christmas breads, you know, rich and often with eggs. Yes.
And with or without raisins, as it says here.
Yes. And that's
speaking of raisins, plumping. You talked about plumped raisins.
Well, if you think raisins are dried fruit, so we've taken the water out of it. Well, you don't want to put that raisin into your dough and have it take the water out of your dough. So you want to plump it first so it's got its moisture from the water and it's not going to take it out of your dough. Plumping usually makes a better bread. So some people, that might have been the reason their dough got too dry. The raisins sucked.
Weren't plumped.
Yeah.
And you can use water? Or?
I just soak it in water. The fancy way is to use brandy. In Wisconsin, we use brandy. I'm guessing a lot of that is just going to evaporate, but you're going to get some of the essence of the brandy. And you can then use that plumping water for your yeast. And your yeast, just be aware, if you're used to your yeast taking 10 minutes to start to bubble up, it's about 2 minutes with that, because that plumping water is just filled with sugar.
Oh,
and it
sure.
It'll just get your yeast going like crazy. It'll foam over probably out of your container.
Oh, yes. That's a great idea. That's a great tip.
It's sort of like when you make potatoes, you should save the potato water for bread or, yes.
Absolutely. Well, Paulette in Burnham Wood, we are on to you. Hi, Paulette.
Good afternoon, actually. Happy holidays.
To you as well.
I liked your plumping raisin tip. Thank you. I hadn't realized that. That's a great idea. I called because I never was a fan of bread machines, but time is a factor, and so I pulled my old bread machine from years ago out and tried experimenting, and I like all whole wheat bread, and at first it wasn't working. Well, I found what has worked for me is if you use freshly ground whole wheat flour. We have a place it's called Natural Living, but it's like a co-op in Anago, and they have the machine there where you can actually take the berries and grind it right there. And I've done that, and that flour, I can use totally whole wheat flour in my old bread machine, and it is some of the best bread I've ever tasted in my life. I think that there does must make a difference when you have that fresh flour like that.
And one thing I'm going to say is that there are two sort of worlds of opinion about the freshness of flour. Some people want the grains to be ground up and use them immediately. Mm-hmm. Other people think of that as it's too green, and they literally want to age the flour a bit before they use it. I'm not saying either one is correct, but people have these different opinions. It's sort of like some people think beer should be fresh, and other people say, no, beer needs to age for a while.
Well,
and it depends on the beer and your taste. And, yes, it's what makes everything fun here is that.
Yeah. I've just found when I used my older whole wheat flour that had been around for a while, it would never rise to the top.
Well, you do have to be aware that whole wheat flour has the germ and the bran in it, but the germ has oil. And
right.
So whole wheat flour doesn't take that long on the shelf to, to go bad. Obviously, if it goes rancid, you'll see that.
Exactly.
But so a lot of people will store their whole wheat flour in freeze it or maybe keep it in the refrigerator.
Yep. Yeah.
There you
but
go.
Anyway.
Thanks, Paulette.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Judith in Muskego. Hello to you.
Hello. I have a question about my grandmother's Polish babka, which, again, it's a sweet Christmas bread like challah.
Yes.
There's a flour that I bought. It's from Eagle Mills. It says it's a wholesome blend of white and ultra grain flours, and it says it's got 9 grams of whole grain per serving, and it's 1 cup is equal to 1 white cup of flour. Are you familiar with this kind of thing?
Oh, I'm guessing that's a sort of a diluted whole wheat. It's a mixture of white flour and whole wheat flour.
Okay, so you think it would do well in the sweet babka bread?
It would be a more dense bread. It would probably be a little chewier.
Oh, that's good. Sometimes I use this bread flour because it's got more gluten. You think it's a good idea to, because it calls for like 2 cups of flour. So I thought 1 cup of this double fiber flour and 1 cup of the bread flour. Do you think that's a good idea, or should I avoid that?
If you're going to use the one that's got some whole wheat, I'd probably make the other the other one all-purpose for me in terms of taste.
The one that's the bread flour. I should just stick with that one.
Well, no, I would use all-purpose and that mixture, as opposed to that mixture plus, you know, bread flour.
Oh, okay. And then I got another question about yeast. You know, there's packaged yeast and yeast cakes. I'm sure people have asked you this, but do you prefer one over the other?
Yeast cakes work. They're in a lot of old recipes. You can still buy it. It's liquid, or I mean, it's moist, so you have to use it fairly fast. So I usually use the dry yeast, and I get it in bulk, not the pack. I would advise not buying packets anymore for anybody. I'll give you one basic reason. They used to have a tablespoon, and they haven't for a long time. This is how people get in trouble. Their old recipe says use a packet of yeast, but it's not a tablespoon.
That's a good point.
It's not a tablespoon anymore. It's two and a third. It's about two-thirds, three-quarters of what it once was.
So I should measure this before I put it in.
So I would get the bulk and use your tablespoon. Well, most recipes come that way. They'll tell you a tablespoon or a tablespoon and a half. Yes.
Well, this recipe calls for one yeast cake, and then, there's a double yeast cake.
Yeah, and that's gonna essentially be a tablespoon of the dry.
Okay, well, you've saved me some work.
Okay, well, that's good, Judith.
Well, and Merry Christmas to you all.
Merry Christmas to you. Thank you for calling. Someone else emailed in wondering, what are commercial bread makers using to get low-carb bread? Some slices are 5 carbs compared to 22 per slice.
I'm guessing a lot of them are going to be using fiber, because fiber is a carbohydrate, but it depends how they do the labeling. If you're using the insoluble, wheat bran, it's going to go into the fiber column and not the carbohydrate column. Oat bran is soluble. I like to use both. Yes, and there are strange things out there that are technically low carb, and I'm not sure how good they are for you. So if you've got a long list of ingredients, I'd stay away from that bread.
Stay away from that. Make your own bread.
Yeah, Wonder Bread. You wonder why they call it bread. Yes.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. Have you got any classes coming up, bread baking?
Actually, one in January at MATC French Baguettes.
Oh, so I can. Is it full already?
No, not. Last time I looked, it was not full.
So students go to the Madison Area Technical College.
Yes. Which is now called Madison College.
Yeah, it's now Madison College, I should say that. So go to Madison College.
Yeah, you can do it all online, yes.
Yeah, and look up courses.
Yeah, it's at the Madison Senior Center.
Yes. Madison Senior Center, okay. Well, thanks for this great Ulakaka, and thanks for the great information. It really flew again.
Yes, I hope. I know I can never answer everybody's questions completely, but you get people going.
Well, Santa Claus is going to be sad because he's coming tomorrow. He's going to be on the program with me tomorrow to answer calls from the children, and he's going to feel bad he missed this Ulakaka. I'm pretty sure of that. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Larry.
Paul Novak, our guest. And as I said, Santa Claus will be with us tomorrow. So if you have a little youngster or grandchild, have them call in. Let Santa know what they want for Christmas. And thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.